This is Talk Back Gardening with Deb Tribe and Sophie Thompson.
On 891, ABC Radio Adelaide, South Australia and Broken Hill.
Good morning and welcome to Talk Back Gardening. Good morning, Sophie.
Good morning, Deb. Great time to be thinking about our gardens and getting excited about future crops.
Exactly right. And you know what? When someone like me, who is decidedly brown-thumbed, buys some tomato seedlings, you know that a lot of other people probably are as well. But the question is it time for planting our tomatoes now? While we were at the Royal Adelaide Show, of course, our independent climatologist Darren Ray said 16 degrees is the Goldilocks zone, and usually he would plant out it in the October long weekend, but maybe not this year. So we're going to have a chat in a moment with Sarah Mitchell from the Diggers Club at the Adelaide Botanic Gardens. But we'd love to hear from you. 1300 222 891. Any tomato questions you might have. And Sophie, you're going to cover a lot of different areas with Sarah this morning.
Absolutely. We've got so much we want to talk about. You know, the when, the where, the why. And just also we're going to ask Sarah for some of her top fives. Ooh. And I know it's pretty tough to limit your favourites, but, you know, why not?
Exactly right. No, well, we will ask her that in just a moment. I've got a couple of ABC Organic Gardener magazines to give away a little bit later in the program as well. So call now with your tomato questions on 1300 222 891. But without further ado, it's great to welcome to the studio right here Sarah Mitchell from the Diggers Club at the Adelaide Botanic Gardens. Thanks for coming in, Sarah.
Oh, my pleasure, Deb. Good morning, Sophie.
Good morning. Now, I'm guessing that, you know, nearly everyone that comes into the shop at the moment is saying, you know, is wanting to talk tomatoes. And tell us about the magical soil temperature that we usually say, you know, that the magic number is 16 degrees, and why we wait till then to plant our tomatoes.
Oh, look, we say 15 degrees. Darren Ray says 16 degrees. Concur. Look, you can get them in earlier than that. However, they will not do well if the soil temperature is not up high enough. While you can put them in and they will grow, year after year we have people coming in at Christmas time saying, oh, but I got my tomatoes in really early and I just don't know why they're not doing well. And I put all of the right things into the soil and maybe the seedling wasn't good and maybe the seed wasn't good. Because roots grow before shoots grow. And if the soil isn't warm enough, the roots can't get down fast enough. And then the tops grow because the sun is shining and then there's not enough root to support that. And so they struggle. They struggle and they're set back and they just never make up the time. So putting your tomatoes in later, putting in your seeds today, if you can keep your soil warm enough, and then not planting until later in October or even early November is going to get you much bigger results.
What does that mean for people like me that have bought seedlings, Sophie and Sarah? Where should I be keeping them and what should I be doing with them? Because clearly we're not at the 15 or 16 degree mark.
We are not. I'm on the plains. I checked my soil this morning, even in my warmest beds, and I use a soil thermometer because different parts of my garden get to different temperatures at different times, whether they're raised beds or in the garden. Mine was scarcely touching 13 degrees, scarcely touching it. So what are you going to do? If you've got a punnet, then it's time to pot them up into some larger pots so that you can keep those warm. If they're in black plastic pots, the soil is going to be warmer in there. But I'd still be bringing them in overnight if you don't have a heat mat for them. If you've already got little tomatoes which are in individual pots, you can pop them up into the next size pot if you pop those in a 6-inch pot. Unless, of course, you've got a greenhouse, unless, of course, you've got special things happening, but absolutely, unless you're having fun and doing an experiment in the garden, I'd absolutely not be popping your tomatoes in yet.
Okay, I hope it's not too late for mine already. Back to you, Soph.
Well, one of the things is that, you know, there's still lots we can be doing right now to prep because basically tomatoes, the quality of the crop is determined by the quality of the soil. So where should people be planting them out? And if they haven't already prepped that soil, what should they be doing?
Oh, look, in a perfect world, yes, start your prepping earlier. I've been getting my compost and bits and pieces into my garden for the last month or so, but I'll be going home today and doing some more. so what I think of soil as a supermarket, and the more I can load the shelves with, the more my plants have access to when they need it. So I'm not a delivery service. They're not asking for something because the leaves are going yellow and then I'm rushing to try and meet their order. I'm loading the supermarket shelves and they can go down at their leisure. And if they want to make, you know, whatever for dinner tonight, they can get it off the shelf. And so by going organic, and making sure that you have really good bacteria working in the garden for you and really good fungus working on the roots of your plants, then, and a good root system and a perfect, you know, perfect sunshiny spot for them, then they can go to their heart's content. So, yes, I'm putting compost in. I'm putting in granular seaweed so that I'm not putting on a seaweed solution all season long, because that's adding organic matter to the soil. But it also means every single time they get watered, they get a little dose of that silica, which means that they're more resistant to disease, they're more resistant to heat and wind and even cold. And that's really important. Yeah, rock dust, a little bit of gypsum for the calcium to make sure they don't get blossom end rot. All of those sorts of things. I'm doing that now so that by the time it's time to pop in my seedlings, they're going to go great guns.
Okay, so now we're at the stage of talking varieties. Now, there's two things I want to cover here. Well, three things, actually. And the first is determinate versus indeterminate, because there's often these terms that are a little bit confusing. Tell us about determinate versus indeterminate, Sarah.
So the terms themselves are fairly explanatory, self-explanatory. So determinate, they have a determinate height that they are going to get to. Once they get to flowering stage, they will stop growing, and that's their height. And they'll also, there's a fairly sort of determinate range of where, when they're going to fruit, it's all going to be at once. And so that's really great for making sauces. It's really great for dehydrating. It's really great if you're a commercial grower and you want to crop the whole lot at once. Most of us as home gardeners want indeterminate, which grow to an indeterminate height. They just keep getting taller and taller and growing more leaves to catch more sunshine and make more sugars to grow us beautiful fruit. And that fruit will last for a very long time. You're picking constantly. You'll have early tomatoes, you'll have later tomatoes, you'll have tomatoes every day over summer. Well, later in summer and into autumn, so that you have something for the table, and that's what most of us are aiming for.
Okay, and now the next thing I'm going to talk about is controversial, and talk to, you know, 10 different experts and they'll have different opinions on this, but F1 hybrids versus heirlooms. F1 hybrids are basically many of the common varieties, but you can't save seed, whereas heirlooms are the varieties that are more interesting, I think, and you can save seed from. So tell us your take on that, Sarah.
Well, I'm biased. I work for the Diggers Club. and we're an heirloom specialist. We worked very hard to reintroduce heirlooms in seed into Australia, in the late 70s, actually 80s. And that's an important thing, because when you buy that seed, you own that. That's it. You only have to buy it once, and then you save your seed and you grow it again. And each time you save your seed and grow it again, it acclimatises itself to your garden. And that means that you're getting the best that you can out of your garden. F1 hybrids, they're really great for commercial growers. They want their tomatoes to last on a supermarket shelf for a very long time. They want them to survive transport. They want them to all fruit at once so that they can harvest effectively. We don't. That's not what we're growing tomatoes in our gardens for. We want things that taste amazing. We want things that have, you know, perhaps hundreds of years of history behind them and have been handed down from generation to generation, family to family, and over the back fence to your neighbours, because it's amazing. This is the most delicious tomato I've ever eaten. And so that chain of that seed that you are planting in your garden today has a family history going back generations, because it's special. And that's why we plant heirlooms. And we have over 71 varieties. Oh, it's probably more now. You know, and every single one of those we have chosen. We trial lots, but only some of them make it onto our list. And we trial lots because we want to make sure that everybody has access to really, really exciting things. Gardeners love a challenge and we want to try new things which are old, and they're old and they've made it this far for a very good reason.
Now, I know lots of people say, oh, well, F1 hybrids are more disease resistant, but many of us heirloom growers would disagree. So that's where the contention comes in. Now, one quick thing, and then I know Deb will want to butt in. When you go to plant them, when the soil temperature is finally there, when you've done your soil prep and you go to plant them, you don't plant them at the same level they are in the seedling, do you?
In a perfect world, no. If you... When you plant your seedlings, you'll notice that they have some little cotyledon seed leaves at the bottom, which look quite different to the others. Nip those off. Nip off the lowest branches. And some people plant on an angle in a trench. I'm more fond of digging down further and planting them deeper, because that original root system then is deeper, which is more protected from the very hot weather that we're going to get in December and January. But also those perfect little hairy legs that they have, all of those hairs are going to turn into new root system over the next 10 days. And that means that they've got more ability to take up more things from the soil, and that will make them tougher once the hot weather comes.
Well, I am going to butt in.
Thanks, Sarah. That's great.
I was trying to be quiet for once so you could.
Look, it's a fascinating conversation. I'm learning so much listening to the both of you. We are talking tomatoes. Chris is going to join us in a moment. He's got a question. If you've got one, join in as well on 1300 222 891.
This is Talk Back Gardening with Deb Tribe and Sophie Thompson.
On 891, ABC Radio Adelaide, South Australia and Broken Hill.
This morning we are talking tomatoes. Sophie Thompson, as always, and Sarah Mitchell from the Diggers Club at the Adelaide Botanical Gardens is in the room as well. Now, Chris joins us. Chris, is it Boatswain Point or Boatswain Point? How do you say it, near Kingston? Boatswain Point. Okay. Now, you'd like a bit of identification on a tomato.
Yeah, Sophie, I've seen it on the Gardening Australia show once. The long tomatoes are about the length of your thumb, if not a bit longer. They're about the same thickness. They're Italian tomato. Logan Kingston used to grow them, but he's gone now.
Sarah, does it ring a bell for you?
Look, there's probably plenty of things that could be, unfortunately, and that is the joy of heirlooms, is that lots of people have saved lots of things from over the years when they came in with different families from across the world when they migrated to Australia. And some of those things have only been grown in those people's back gardens. They haven't passed them on to anybody. But clearly that was growing very well there, so I hope you're saving the seed. Diggers specialises in saving those seed from families and testing them, trialing them, and if they're really very fabulous, then we build up those numbers and make sure that our members and, you know, Australians in general have access to that, so that that really special seed is not lost. But so far as identifying that, we might need some pictures, or you might like to have a look on the Diggers website and go through the littler tomatoes and see what you can find. But it might be just something really special that he's been growing from his family for a very long time.
I reckon it was called Tom Thumb.
Ah, there you go. Well, maybe it's Tom Thumb. That's not one that I'm particularly familiar with, but it sounds like it. That sounds like a good description.
Oh, they're a beautiful tomato.
Excellent.
You slice them in halves and stick them in your salad. They're great.
Okay, Chris. Well, look, thank you very much. You've thrown one out there that we're not 100% sure on, but have a look at the site and you might see the exact match there. Thank you very much for calling in on 1300 222 891. People are not sure about what tomato they've got, to go and have a look at the various tomatoes on the website, and there are lots of them, so you might get a good ID there.
Fantastic.
On the text line, 0467 922 891, this texter says, I didn't know about the tomato stem hairs making more roots. I will plant plant my seedlings deeper. Thank you very much for that. Jack from Port Wakefield says, I have my seedlings just popping up. I grow Abruzzo tomatoes each year from the same seeds since 1990.
Oh, perfection. That's what we love to hear.
That's brilliant, isn't it? Heather at Encounter Bay says, I grew two Burnley Bounty tomatoes this year, planted 2101 due to having moved house right at the normal planting time, and we picked the last tomato early June.
Oh, yes. Look, I've recently been made aware of somebody in my suburb who, yeah, is happily still has been picking tomatoes all winter long. And that's about, well, that requires a fair bit of skill in order to be able to do that. But, yes, it's a lot of fun to see how far you can push it.
That's great.
Absolutely. And Burnley Bounty is one of those cool season tomatoes.
Yeah, wonderful. And also on the text line, Andrew from Hope Valley says, I sowed tomato seeds in trays 6 weeks ago, have them in very small plastic greenhouse on the path, going well. I sowed Lebanese cucumbers last week and have shoots already waiting for that 16 degree soil. Hopefully in 4 weeks, it's still cold up here by Anstey Hill. Thanks, Andrew. And this text says, I don't understand. If I plant seeds and the soil is cold, they don't come up. However, my lettuce and Chinese greens are already sprouting from last year's seeds dropped into the ground, and I'm at Allgate. Care to comment?
I do care to comment. So lettuce, and particularly Asian greens, their soil temperature is very different. They're the things that we call hardy annuals, and they're things which will tolerate much cooler soil, much cooler temperatures, and that's really very fabulous because they will tell you when they are happy to come up. And they've clearly said that they are, you know, that the soil is good to go for them.
Okay. Now, Sue from Silverton joins us with a question about potting out seedlings. Good morning, Sue.
Hello. Yes, I was given some Tommy Toe seedlings and they're growing and they're now in 6-inch pots. I think I'm going to need to pot them up again. But how long can I keep that process going and how big a pot before I actually plant them out? I'm worried they're going to get into huge pots and be, you know, half grown before I get them into the ground.
Oh, I'm hearing you. And I guess that's part of the reason why we want to start our tomatoes early. But if we start them very early, we're getting to a sizable plant before we're able to pop them in the garden. And yes, absolutely, you can take them up to the next size. Have a look at the roots gently if you can take them out. And the issue with that will be that it gets really hard to plant up a fleshy plant without the soil falling to pieces by the time you actually get to planting time, and that's part of the issue. Whereabouts are you?
I'm in Silverton, which is down towards Cape Jervis.
Yeah, okay. So I think I would not. Well, you're often more temperate on the coast there, but I would be potting them up one more time before I popped them in.
Yep. Okay. Thank you very much.
Thanks, Sue. And if you've got a question, 1-300-222-891. Now, Sophie, I know that you've got a lot of things to chat to Sarah about. There are a lot more texts as well, but I think you better jump in and have a chat first.
Okay. Well, I'm going to go straight to the gold. What are your top five tomato varieties for the garden, and maybe top five for pots? And then I want to try and squeeze in about pruning.
Sure. Look, 71 varieties that we have. Who's your favourite child?
The one that performs best.
Exactly. Green zebra. Green zebra. I don't think we will ever have a summer garden without green zebra growing in it. You can't get things like that in a supermarket. And I don't want things that I can get in a supermarket. I want special. I grew it myself. And my husband would say that it's not a summer evening unless you can get home from work and walk down to the garden and pick a green zebra and bring it inside and chop off a slice and put it on a cracker with some cheese and some pepper and eat it. And then he knows the day is over and he's home and he's good to go.
How lovely.
Oh, it's so delightful. But you don't get that zing from something that you bought at the supermarket. We love supermarket tomatoes because they're there all the time and they're there when we need them in bulk. However, nothing like growing your own. So green zebra is top of the list. Hungarian Italian heart, I really love. That's a more cold tolerant one too. And certainly when I've grown that in the past, one of them got to 600 grams and that was without a lot of help on my behalf. That's a big tomato, over half a kilo, and sweet and juicy and delicious. And it certainly would never last on a supermarket shelf because it's just too soft. They grow in a really unusual way too. But when other things are not ripening in the garden, you know, previous years you're looking at all your tomatoes, they're all green. Why are they not ripening? Hungarian heart ripens because it's more tolerant of the cool weather. Wopsapinnikin peach, I love. It's little.
Wopsapinnikin peach.
Wopsapinnikin peach. And it's called peach because, unbelievably, it's got the tiniest little bit of fuzz on it, just like a peach, and it makes it a little bit more resistant to pests. Not that we have a huge problem with tomato pests in Adelaide, but that's a beauty and it's sweet. Black cherry, you can never not have black cherry. It wins our taste tests time and again, and it's very apt to self-seeding. So if you've got a volunteer coming up in the garden as a real possibility, it's either tomato or it's black cherry. And Valentine is a really special little one that has little trusses of little heart-shaped tomatoes that are just perfect to pop on the barbecue so that you can have perfect little toasted, gorgeousness on your plate in summer.
Well, Sarah, apart from black cherry, which has got a very boring name, green zebra, Hungarian heart,
Wopsapinnikin peach
and Valentine are amazing. Now back to you, Soph.
Well, I would also say for people that are beginners that have never grown a tomato before, try a tomato.
Yes.
I just think it's bulletproof.
It is.
And it does have spectacular flavour. And for many years, it used to actually win the top flavour. Now there are so many other ones. Now, if we just had to list five for pots, we mightn't have time to go into them. What are the best ones for pots? And we're talking decent-sized pots, aren't we? We're talking about 30 to 50-centimetre pots.
Yeah, the bigger the better, really. You don't want your roots cooking because they're in a little pot and the sun is shining on the side. Look, Legend, these are determinate varieties because they're really very good for growing in pots. Mm-hmm. So Legend is something that's a really big, meaty tomato, but you can grow it on in a pot. It's determinate. Tasmanian Chocolate is, again, more cool. Tolerant, obviously grown in Tasmania. They are big tomatoes. They are chocolatey. They are delicious. Stupice is.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah. I'm growing that one.
Yeah. Yep. Little golf ball size, you know, deliciousness. Delicious. But yes, somewhat smaller, easier to grow in a smaller space. And Principe Borghese is. Look, it's a bit of an all rounder because you can grow it in a pot, because it's smaller, because it's. More cool tolerant, so you possibly could pop it in this weekend if you had a seedling. And it's great for drying. So when you have something which is determinant and it's going to give you a bigger flush of tomatoes all at once, then you need a plan of action for what you're going to do with them when you get your glut. And I dehydrate, and it means that we have tomatoes year-round to pop a handful in whatever. Did I talk about Perth Pride? Perth Pride's pretty special. That's relatively new to us.
Fantastic.
And now I know this is something you wanted to cover, Sophie, and on the text line Jane says, is it okay to cut the height of a tomato plant when it gets too tall to manage, please? So what are the simple rules around pruning, Sarah?
Yeah, look, an indeterminate tomato in a perfect position will continue to grow over 2 metres tall. So absolutely, I pop them on top. Take the top out when they get to about nose height for me, because that's easy and manageable. And when you do that, it will put all its effort into side shoots, and that's when it makes its factory to get in sunshine and make sugars to put in flower production and really get going so that you get a really beautiful big crop.
And Amanda from the Adelaide Plain says, is it too late to sow tomato seeds now?
I will be planting some this afternoon. I will be planting some next weekend and the weekend after. No, absolutely not, because we don't want to be planting until late October, perhaps into, and that's perfect.
This is one Sophie might like to answer. Can we grow tomatoes in large wicking pots, asks Rachel in the Southern Hills.
Absolutely. And, yeah, you certainly can. And I've done it year in, year out. You know, depending on the size, if it's a wicking pot versus a wicking bed, you'd be going for the smaller varieties, Legend, and those Tasmanian Choice Stupice, Principe Borghese, and Perth Pride, as Sarah suggested. So more compact varieties if you're doing a wicking pot.
And still have lots of tomatoes from last year. Chicken manure is the answer, says this texter. Wayne at Kilkenny has sent through a beautiful photograph of his seedlings in the window on heat mats, getting ready to plant out. Can you recommend a tomato variety that produce in garden area that is well lit but only gets 3 to 4 hours of actual sun exposure, asks Ian in Port Lincoln.
Ian, good on you for trying. Look, they don't love it. It makes them more prone to pests and diseases. I would absolutely probably try one of the varieties that's more cold tolerant. Have a go at Stupice and see how that goes for you. Airflow is going to be really important for you to make sure that they are doing that. And you might even controversially try a little bit of white shade cloth, perhaps around it, because that actually increases the light levels. It has to be below 50%, but that actually gives it a bit more reflection and that might help you.
Sophie, did you have any more questions for Sarah?
No, I think that's been fantastic. We've covered so much. And if, you know, anything, I would just say to all our listeners to get out there, if you haven't already sown them, Sarah's told you it's not too late, and get sowing and just keep your plants growing. And if you've done all that and you want something to do, get out there and add more compost to your soil.
Exactly. Sarah Mitchell from the Diggers Club at the Adelaide Botanic Gardens. Always go to the Diggers Club for advice as well. Thank you so much for coming into the studio this morning. It's been enlightening.
My pleasure, Deb. Thanks very much for having me.
Thank you. We'll have you back, I guarantee. We'll get back into general talk about gardening. 1300 222 891.
This is Talkback Gardening with Deb Tribe and Sophie Thompson.
On 891, ABC Radio Adelaide, South Australia and Broken Hill.
Good morning and welcome to Talkback Gardening. Good morning, Sophie.
Good morning, Deb.
Lovely to be with you on
Great to be here.
Yeah, on this wonderful weathery weekend, because we've got a bit of rain and a bit of sun, so it's going to be a little bit of cloud as well, but a good day to get prepared to get your jobs done in the garden. And if you've got any questions for Sophie, the number to call right now is 1300 222 891. We've got lots of lines free, so we'd love to hear from you. If you've got a comment to make, send them through on the text line 0467 922 891. I've got a couple of ABC Organic Gardener magazines to give away as well, one by phone and one by text, if you'd like to get prepared for that a little bit later in the program. But right now we're Talkback Gardening, 1300 222 891. Maggie from Newton is the first cab off the rank. Maggie, you've got some roses, but they've got some aphids as well. Good morning.
Yes, good morning. I don't know what's going on. I've fed the area, and I've got scale all over the base of one, which I've removed. And then this thing, I found I had all lots and lots of green fly and aphids. And what I've done before is put soapy water to, you know, drown them like that. I just wondered, what's the cause of this happening? Because it seems to happen a lot.
Okay, so aphids love soft, sappy growth, and that can be a seasonal thing. It can be if, you know, plants are overfed, if they're not in full sun, you know, a whole list of things. And what I would suggest you do is basically not to use soapy water. It's just simply to squirt those aphids off. Now, within 2 weeks of when you first see aphids, you should start to see the beneficial bugs. So we're talking about ladybirds and their larvae. Now, if you've never seen a baby ladybird, please Google it. It looks nothing like a ladybird. It looks more like a black crocodile with little orange spots on it. Baby ladybirds are amazing carnivores, and they eat more aphids than ladybirds do, actually. The other beneficials that will come in are the hoverflies. So they're like a tiny, about 1 centimetre long, or like a little coloured a bit like a European wasp, and they buzz around. Now, they're actually vegetarians, so they come in for nectar and pollen, but their larvae that they lay are amazing carnivores and will eat your aphids. And then the last one is the lace wings. Now, lace wings are these little delicate-looking creatures. Again, they only come in for nectar and pollen, but they lay their babies, which is sometimes called junk bugs, and they are amazing devourers of aphids. So within, you know, from when you've first seen them, within 2 weeks, usually the good guys have cleaned them off. Now, the reason I don't like using soapy water, even though it works, is because if you throw it on the aphids, sure, you'll kill those aphids, but you'll also kill any ladybird eggs that are in there. You'll desiccate them. You'll desiccate any ladybird larvae, hoverfly larvae, or lacewing larvae. So if you can't bear to do nothing, simply squirt the aphids off. The reality is within a couple of days, there'll be a new crop of aphids there. But if you do it for a couple of weeks until the good guys have built up in numbers, they'll clean it up. And the only other thing, Maggie, is to make sure that you've got lots of plants full of nectar and pollen to bring those beneficial bugs in. So whether it's any sort of daisy, calendula, marguerite daisies, whether it's alyssum, which is, you know, you can just smell alyssum, that nectar and pollen brings the good guys in, and any of the other beautiful flowers, you know, Queen Anne's lace, parsley, coriander, any of the other things like that are what we call insectary plants, and they bring good guys in that help you manage the bad.
Oh, wonderful. That's fantastic information. Thank you very much. I've got some native plants nearby that have lots of flowers on at the moment. Would that be enough nectar, or do I need to put the things you mentioned?
Well, it does depend on the type of flower, because all these beneficial bugs have really tiny mouths. So ultimately you need tiny flowers. So that's where a daisy, we look at a daisy and we say, okay, that's one flower. But if you look in the centre, there are hundreds of little flowers in the centre, all full of nectar and pollen, and the petals on the outside are really just, you know, they're bling, they're a landing platform. So the other sort of flower that we often recommend is called an umbel, which is lots of little flowers from a central point. That's things like Queen Anne's lace, parsley flowers, coriander flowers, carrot flowers, dill, fennel, and more. And again, it's lots of little flowers. So the beneficial bugs need little flowers to come in. But basically, if you just stand back and watch for 2 weeks, Maggie, I guarantee you the good bugs will save the day.
All right. Well, that's fantastic information, and I'll put some herbs in there. That sounds a good idea. Yeah. Okay. Thank you very much.
Thanks, Maggie. 1-300-222-891. I love the analogies we're hearing this morning, Sophie. You with petals as landing platforms for bees and other great insects. And earlier, you know, soil is a supermarket. You know, you should be able to just go through and
absolutely
pick off the shelves what you want.
I thought that was a great analogy.
Me too. It's really, really good.
Absolutely.
Sue has called in from Seacliff talking about soil, which is perfectly apt. Hi, Sue.
Hello. So I was following on from an earlier caller who had some root competition from raised beds, and they wanted to rejuvenate soil. I had a similar problem, but I would actually like to turn the raised beds into wicking beds, and so I've previously heard that to use not garden soil, but I guess more potting soil. And I just wondered if there's any way I can transform my soil from my raised bed into something suitable for a wicking bed.
Okay, great question, Sue. Now, can I tell you, you don't use potting soil in wicking beds. You use a really good quality veggie garden soil, and then I tend to put a third in with it as well, because the only reason wicking beds wick is if you've got high organic matter content in the soil. So if you've got soil from other raised beds, you can certainly add more organic matter to it to use it in a wicking bed. And as a matter of fact, while I was renting for the 18 months, I had a couple of raised beds. I had some wicking beds and I had a couple of raised beds. And when I've moved out here and started my new wicking beds, I did take that soil with me and I've added more compost. So, you know, compost is the key. And so you really want to add organic matter to that soil. If your soil is already really good from the raised bed, you might need so much compost. But when I've bought, say, a veggie garden mix, usually I find I add up to a third compost to that so that I get good wicking happening. But, yeah, don't use potting mix. Potting mix or potting media is really for pots, and wicking beds are, you know, a different thing. We want beautiful soil. And I must admit, with any new bed I'm doing, I do use microbial stimulants. Now you can buy them readily available, from your local nursery or garden centre, and they're basically microbes that you water on the soil and they get the soil humming because it's all about soil life.
Right. Well, thank you so much.
Okay.
I have a home compost that I do, so that would be okay.
Oh, your home compost would be fantastic. So, you know, adding that to the soil and, you know, just it's like a brew, really. And once it gets humming, the plants will thrive. So enjoy your wicking beds, Sue. The only disclaimer I should put about wicking beds, they're highly addictive. And you might start with one and you'll end up with multiples.
Thank you so much. That's really great news.
Thank you, Sue. That's a great disclaimer there, Sophie. Angela is in Victor Harbour with some citrus questions. Good morning, Angela.
Good morning, Sophie. I've got two citrus trees and they're both in the same situation. And one is covered in leaves and doesn't fruit. And one is full of fruit and no leaves.
Okay, you know, nature is fantastic because she's always challenging us. How long have they been in the ground, Angela?
2-3 years.
Okay, and when did the tree with not many leaves lose its leaves?
It's been mostly without leaves for nearly most of its life, so it's not done very well for some reason, and that's why I've got an axe leaning against.
And as you know, Angela, I can't give you any information whatsoever about your lemon and lime, but I have heard also of leaning an axe against a tree. Has that had any beneficial effect on the tree?
No, it's still sitting there. And I'm just hoping I don't have to use it, so.
No, well, just hang in there and Sophie will be back. What I will do is have the magazine competition because I've got a couple of ABC Organic Gardener magazines to give away. One by phone if you haven't won anything from the ABC in the last month, so we like to share it around a bit, and one by text. So the phone line is 1-300-222-891. Be patient because Lucas is trying to sort out the Sophie issue. And one by text, which is 0467922891.
This is Talk Back Gardening with Deb Tribe and Sophie Thompson
on 891 ABC Radio Adelaide, South Australia and Broken Hill.
I'll tell you who the winners are of our magazines shortly, but we've got Angela from Victor Harbour talking about her lemon and lime tree, one doing well and one not so good. Sophie, what further advice would you like to give?
Okay, so we need to consider, you know, the situation of those trees. The one without the leaves is the one that, you know, I would be thinking about. So does it have good drainage? Does it have root competition? You know, are they planted next to each other, Angela?
Yes, they are. Yes, they are. And they're both facing the same direction for sunlight and shelter.
And what's your soil like there? Is it heavy clay or...?
It's a sort of sandy loam. I've put soil in with them when I planted them as well, just to build up the soil, so a potting mixture and stuff like that. So they're in very similar conditions, so...
And there's no tree or anything or large shrub next to them or next to the one that's not doing well?
No.
Okay. So I think we need to look at, you know, doing everything you can to nurture that tree. So seaweed-based plant tonics. It's actually not good, I will say, to put potting soil in the ground. Potting soil is not designed for that. It's compost in the ground is fantastic, but potting soil isn't. It's got a different sort of makeup. So I would be using seaweed-based plant tonics. I would put some compost around the soil, and if you can, I'd actually knock all the flowers off. The fact that it's got lots of flowers and fruits is actually, it's sort of like if I'm going to die, I'm going to reproduce. It's like a last-ditch effort. So I would be doing, you know, seaweed-based plant tonics, liquid forms every fortnight. I'd knock the fruit and flowers off. And really keep an eye on watering. And going back to Ian Tolley's old watering tip, you touch the leaf in the middle of a warm day, and if it doesn't feel cool to the touch, it is dry. So do that for a month or so. We're coming, you know, as we're coming into the warmer weather, it's going to start to want to respond. and let's see if it puts leaves back on, but really keep the water up to it, because watering, if the soils are different, and if that soil where the plant is doesn't hold on to moisture, it could be water stress even though they're next to each other.
And one other last little question about it. Is it okay to cut the dead parts off of it?
Oh, absolutely. The dead parts are dead, so it doesn't hurt to take them off, and it'll make it look better. So good luck with that, Angela.
Thank you very much.
Thanks, Angela. 1300 222 891. Carolyn from Glenside is on the line. Now, Carolyn, you've got an east-facing balcony. Good morning.
Oh, good morning. Yes, that's right. East-facing balcony. With one northeast corner. It's a long balcony, 18 metres, about 3 metres wide. I would want to put about 6 ceramic pots along the edge, facing east, and within those pots put some ideally flowery, bushy plants that will screen out a car park opposite, like pretty flowers, something all year round. For birds and butterflies and bees.
Okay. Can you tell me, have you got, if it's a balcony, is it a balcony that protrudes, or do you have a solid roof above you that stops sun coming in?
Right. Yeah, we do have a solid roof, so we do get some light in.
Well, okay. How many floors up? So I'm trying to also assess wind.
We're only first floor up, although we do get some wind from the northeast, which is quite surprising to me, actually, how much we do get.
Yeah. Okay, so, you know, the thing is that's a tricky position, and what will tend to happen is the plants that don't get light on the backside are going to go a bit lopsided. So if you could have it that the pots get turned every now and again,
that would
certainly make a difference. I mean, before you said natives, one of the plants I was thinking about is Maria, which I absolutely love. If I lived in town or lived in a frost-free area, I would have it. And the reason I love it is because it has scented white flowers on and off for a long period. And that perfume, to me, is just magnificent, and it grows really well in pots. You know, often you see it as sort of around cafes where they've got them in troughs, to create a bit of a barrier between one cafe and the next. So it's really tough.
Can you spell Maria, please, for me? Maria?
As in Murray with an A on the end. And really, really tough. Lily pillies are also gorgeous and are, you know, renowned for being great as sort of screening plants too. And there's so many different sorts, Carolyn. I think what I'd probably tell you to do, if natives are your preference, I'd actually go to a native plant specialist somewhere like State Flora or Coromandel Native Plants, but maybe leave a couple of pots for yourself, because that position would also suit something like a gardenia. Gardenias east-facing and, you know, not native, but to have some special plants like gardenias or morayas would be gorgeous. And then the other plant I'm just going to throw in there, only because I've got some flowering in pots facing east on my veranda at the moment, are clivias. I absolutely love them. And, you know, glossy green leaves all year round, amazing flowers. Another exotic plant that you could throw into the mix would be what we call the gold dust plant, really quite hardy and, you know, just a fabulous pot specimen. But I would I would work out how many pots you can have a list, and then work out what a stayers and what a goers.
Yes. Actually, my daughter has some lovely salvias, which I thought would be rather nice too.
Well, they could be, but less so, because they actually do prefer full sun. So, so you need something, you really need a plant that is happy in shade or sun. And, you know, maybe have some salvias that you can, they could be in smaller pots even and enjoy. You know, salvias are an absolute delight for the birds and the bees and the butterflies sometimes too, but not so good when they don't get full sun.
All right then. Now that sounds wonderful, Sophie. You give me some good choices there.
Lots of ideas, Carolyn.
Right, thank you very much.
Thank you. It sounds like a fun project to have there. Thank you to Nancy from West Lakes, who sent through a beautiful photograph of her lilies. They look beautiful in flower at the moment. Marianne, oh, I should say congratulations to our magazine winners, Mariana from Seaview Downs and Sandra from Manopara. They are on their way out to you. Marianne is in Albert Park, and you want to remove some couch grass, Marianne. Good morning.
Good morning. Hello, Sophie. How are you?
Great. Thank you. Oh, hello. I know this beautiful voice. I can picture your smiling face, Marianne. How are you?
Yes, I'm good. Thank you. Yes. In May, I dug up some sweet potatoes in the bed with this couch under a fruit with a fruit tree, and I'm trying to get rid of. I dug up as many sweet potatoes as I could, and then I want to get rid of the couch. So I've covered it. I've covered it with. I'm volunteering at QICC. As a matter of fact, this is where it is. Mm-hmm. You know QICC?
No, I can't say that I do, Mary.
It's Queensland, Queenstown. A mental health place on Portland
Road. Oh, okay, beautiful.
Yes, yep. And I volunteer there. And so it was in May, and I spread mulch and stuff, and then put a paper and cardboard and secured it with some pieces of wood. And it's been there since May. And now I don't know how long to leave it or what to do next.
Okay. Can I say that couch, because couch is more or less summer active and less, less going to grow in winter, it's still going to be there. So if anything, I would suggest that you put newspaper down. So, you know, pull the cardboard up or put mulch on top of the cardboard.
Yes, I've done that. I've got the paper across, and then the cardboard, and then the mulch.
Okay, perfect. So the thing is that while I'd love to be optimistic, couch is a pretty tough beast, and I don't know that you'll get rid of it completely, but you could certainly reduce it. If you can avoid planting there, because as soon as you start to plant in that bed, as soon as you cut into that newspaper or cardboard, the couch is going to have an exit and come out again. So I would leave it as long as you can, and even if it means that you don't plant something in that bed till you're absolutely certain it's not going to come up again. Really, you're not going to see it start to grow until it starts to warm up. So by November, I think you might find, you'll find shoots trying to come up on the side, or what you could even do is lift the cardboard and newspaper up, have a peek underneath and see what it's like. Now, the couch may be there, but it might be all white because it's been excluded of sunshine. So yes. Getting rid of couch and cucuya by sheet mulching does work, but it needs to be ongoing and you can't be in a hurry. I would say, it could take 6 months for it to die, not just a few months.
So 6 months from when I did it or 6 months from
six
now?
6 months from when you did it, but I would also look because it's been, when you did it is over its dormant period, it may just be sleeping, So don't go planting into it too prematurely. Make sure it's completely gone because couch, is pretty hard to kill.
Yeah, definitely.
So good luck with that, Marianne. That's a tough gig.
Good luck, Marianne. And I think we're almost wrapped up, but we're going to take one last question from Cara in O'Sullivan Beach about a nectarine tree. Hi, Cara.
Hi, how are you going?
We're good.
I've just got a nectarine tree in the ground. It's been there for many, many years. It's probably about 3.5-4 metres high. I took some of the height off of it like after the last season, but last season all of the fruit that grew just dropped off, like mass dropping before it ripened. And I'm just wondering what I need to do to stop that from happening this year.
Okay, so water is the magic key. So last year, bear in mind, was the driest year on record. And if your crop is if your tree needs water, the first thing it will do to shed its load is to drop its fruit. So if you can just make sure, you know, you don't need to be watering daily or anything like that, but as the ground starts to dry out, get into a routine, and it might be that you water once a week a really good soak. Now, how do you know what a good soak is? You're trying to get water down to 30 centimetres deep. I really don't trust moisture meters. I would put on your sprinkler as much as you think, you know, it's effective. And then when you turn it off, dig down and see how far the water penetrates. Mm. Now, depending on your type of soil, you might actually need to do it, you know, longer than you need. But, you know, at least 30 centimetres deep. And if you can do that once a week, your nectarines will stay on the tree. Good luck with that, Cara.
Thank you. And just in terms of feed, liquid fertiliser or...?
I tend to use pelletised fertiliser just because it's going to break down over 3 months and I'm time poor. If you do a liquid feed, you've got to do it regularly. You've got to do a little bit and often. But if you just did, you know, I work on a handful of those pelletised chicken manure-based fertilisers per square metre and... do that and then cover it with mulch and deep watering, and I think you'll have success this year.
Perfect. Thank you so much.
Thanks, Cara. I hope you yeah, pick those delicious nectarines very soon. Sophie, it's been a very busy talkback gardening. When isn't it, really? And thank you very much to Marianne from Keith in South Australia. Just jumped in with some photographs of beautiful tulips in her garden at the moment and said she's loved the show. Thank you very much, Marianne. Lovely to hear from you. Sophie, a busy weekend for you, as always. What are you planting this weekend?
I'm planting 600 native ground covers and grasses in my orchard. So I've got some friends coming to join me, and it's my last ditch effort to rewild this place.
Wow, you have got some really good friends. That's really a lot of ground covers to plant in one weekend, but good luck with it. And it's great to follow your progress on your Sophie's Patch website. It's very interesting indeed.
Thank you, Deb. Happy gardening to all our listeners.